And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
You are now tuned into anything potable, the most honorable, the most audible. Hold the applause, like Paul Pierce when he was
welcome
to the hospital,
like anything is potable. Boston Celtics podcast here on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm your host, Sam Jam Packard, professional sports fan, joined as always by the kid, the god, the legend himself, El Nino, many are calling him, Celtics beat reporter from The Athletic, Jay King, ladies and gentlemen. And we are coming to you at 4:15 on July 1st in the middle of free agency. And I've been trying to think, the last time we talked was the right after the Marcus Smart trade. And so I was still pretty devastated then. Spirits have returned.
You're back. I'm back, baby.
I'm back, baby.
Just in on Porzingis? What brought you back?
I just don't stay upset.
You're just a resilient guy.
Yeah, I'm just a resilient guy. I'm ready to fight the next fight. Like, I'm going to miss Marcus, but like, we got to move into next season and be positive. But I asked Jay right before we started recording what the most important thing that's happened in the world of the Celtics since we last recorded, and what was your answer?
That is not exactly how you framed the question.
I said, what should we lead with? What should we start with the podcast?
And I said, O'Shea Brissett.
O'Shea Brissett hit down, so what, 6 threes against the Celtics in a game in Indiana, completely destroyed them.
And did the Steph Curry spin before it goes in move, which is always powerful, especially coming from a 31% shooter.
Yeah, so the Celtics signed him to what, 2-year minimum deal, kind of playing the backup wing position. Solid. Saw a lot of comments just like, oh yeah, O'Shea's Brissett's great. He does all of these things. He's this fluid wing. He's big on the wings, except he can't shoot or finish at the rim. And I was like, all right, that might affect his playing time.
I love how nobody says a word about a guy until something happens with him, and then everyone's the biggest fan.
Love that, like, signing.
That's a great signing. Yeah. Like, oh, great signing. Great job by the Celtics to get some more length and
bring in a guy. Yeah.
Could be a real player if he develops a 3-point shot.
And this is not to hate on O'Shea Brissett. Like, he did have a magnificent game against the Celtics, but some things well, but like, you think you'd want a shooter in that position.
And he just checks boxes for the Celtics, because behind Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, their wing depth was just Sam Hauser. That's it. And he's not the most athletic NBA player. He's not the greatest defensive player in the NBA. And so
I did not mean to start this podcast just by shitting on O'Shea Brissett. I feel like we got off the wrong foot.
That was Sam Hauser.
Oh, yeah. We can shit on him. He's not a good defensive player.
The Celtics needed to add length, athleticism, somebody who could play the big wing spot. And quite frankly, they just need people who can spell Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown at this point. O'Shea Brissett can probably do that. He has a high motor. He defends. He's 6'7" and long. He has typically played power forward the last couple of years in Indiana, but especially with the amount of shooting that the Celtics will have and the amount of skill around him, he could probably play some three in bigger lineups. And so he just made sense. And most importantly for them, he was gettable because he was available at the veterans minimum. And they, quite frankly, just don't have much money to spend right now. They are probably limited to just veteran minimums. They could still hold on to Grant Williams.
Well, let's talk about that. Where does the Grant Williams market sit right now? And how much money would they be willing to take back, or like what offer sheet are they going to match potentially if they get one given the kind of where they stand with the cap right now. Also, we have Kristaps Porzingis signing his 2-year extension. We'll talk about that later. But like for this year's cap, where does retaining Grant Williams fit into that?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because when they traded for Kristaps Porzingis, just a simple scan of the salaries would suggest that Grant Williams was probably gone, because the Celtics, like, if at least by my calculations, if they just fill out their contract to 14 guys with veteran minimum guys, then they're at about $178 million of salary, which is about $4 million shy of the second apron. And so any reasonable deal for Grant Williams would push them above the second apron. And it's reasonable to think that the Celtics probably don't want to be a second apron team. However, Grant was apparently in the Celtics practice facility working out with Jordan Walsh and telling him that.
Wait, well, I saw him at Patriots camp. I didn't know he was in the Celtics facility.
I'm inferring it was implied that it was in the Celtics practice facility, because Jordan Walsh said they were in the weight room. And yeah. I don't think they were at Gold's Gym or Planet Fitness together. So just guessing it was the Celtics practice facility. He also said he absolutely thinks it's a possibility that the Celtics bring him back. And so it just seems like the salary position says one thing, and Grant's whole presence right now says another. When he spoke to the media, and it could just be something he said, but he talked about how he would need to adjust to play with Kristaps Porzingis, like he's still on the team, which he could be still on the team.
It's an interesting, yeah.
But it's just interesting how, like, just the numbers are pointing one way, and everything about Grant is pointing another.
Or the Celtics are just like completely willing to be in the second apron more so than we've like ascribed to teams, because there's like, you can just take the punishment for whatever it is. It does like limit your roster flexibility, but you can get out of it. There's potential contracts you could trade in the future if you sign Grant to a longer deal, and maybe they're just going to pay it. Like it, you have a window with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and if you think Grant Williams can be like an instrumental piece into like a title run this year, or under the new kind of window they've created by extending Porzingis for the next 2 years, it's like, we have this next 3 years where, you know what, maybe we'll accept being above the apron, the second apron, one of those seasons, maybe move on from Brogdon in the future because he has bigger money. But we could see teams just like just go over the apron and spend a bunch, at least for 1 or 2 years, because that's just how you're going to field the championship roster.
And especially if there's not a huge market for Grant, and you get him at a reasonable deal that you'll probably be able to move if you need to at some point over the next couple of seasons, it would make sense. And then the other wild card here is that the Celtics still have a lot of first round picks to offer. And so if the right guy becomes available who they think moves the needle, and probably somebody who's younger and fits the Tatum Brown timeline, they could still load up a huge offer. And it's possible that at the end of the day, they go, like, right now they'd be one of the championship favorites, right? Like,
yeah,
I wouldn't put them at the top, although I think Vegas has them at the top, but they're definitely in that conversation among the favorites. But I think it's probably a different conversation with ownership if they do make one more big move. And then it's like loading up over the second apron. Sure. Like, this is a team that it's easy to see winning a championship. And I think that's the wild card here, because the Celtic, they added 2 first round picks in the Porzingis trade, but one of them is already gone because they traded back and got Jordan Walsh and got a bunch of other second round picks. But the other one's there, and they still control all of their future first, although one of them is a swap with the Spurs, potential swap with the Spurs, and they still have a bunch of swaps. So they could make a huge offer here. And so I don't think that's
like, are you just talking about a hypothetical star in the future? Like, or is it like Joel Embiid? Like, where are we leading with this first round pick talk?
I think so. I mean, this is all hypothetical stuff. And I'm just,
that's what free agency is for. That's what we do on July 1st. We make up all sorts of crazy theories.
Okay. Well, the Raptors just lost Fred VanVleet, right? And Siakam and OG Anunoby are both, I believe, entering the final year of their deals. So they're probably not going to fetch a ton if the Raptors are willing to trade them. Who knows? They've been reluctant to do so far, but somebody like that could be available.
Well, this is the thing that's interesting, is that if you do sign Graham, and I think we can talk about Brogdon too, like you could have a bunch of different salary slots to kind of trade people. Like Malcolm Brogdon feels like he is very tradable at this point, if they wanted to go after another player. You mentioned all the first round picks. If you get Grant at a good number, Robert Williams, as much as I want him to be a starting center, like his contract right now is insane. Just given where the new cap structure is. And so I definitely think the Celtics have a lot of flexibility in terms of trading, especially if they do. Like, I don't know what the Grant number is. A lot of talk about other teams offering him like the full mid-level, which is what, 12?
Yeah.
And so, like, if you can get Grant Williams on like a 2+1 or like a 4, even a 4-year deal, just like with that short, small amount of money with the cap continuing to go up, it just feels like a pretty good asset to have. And you might be willing to just take the momentary hit for just having, like, I guess, that flexibility. Although,
yeah,
once you go over the second apron, you can't aggregate the salaries anymore. So that's where things get like a little bit more difficult.
Yeah. And the second apron comes with all sorts of roster building restrictions that would certainly impact you. And to go over it, you probably want at least a reasonable chance of winning a title, and to really like crush through it and commit yourself to second apron for years. I think you probably want a team that's going to be a favorite to, like, a pretty substantial favorite to win a title in one of those years. So I don't know. Maybe it is Joel Embiid. You look at the 76ers situation, it is in tatters. What are they going to get for James Harden? They weren't good enough with Harden. If they have to accept 50, 60 cents on the dollar to move him, then...
Well, they have Pat Bev now, so it might change things.
Pat Bev and PJ Tucker are just going to...
I actually kind of wanted the Celtics together to sign Pat Bev, just because he's such an instigator, and like I feel like they kind of need that with Marcus Smart replacement. But I like that move for Philly. Pat Bev is just he's the type of guy who you don't really like him unless he's on your team, and then you love him.
He lifts the energy.
Yeah,
and I agree. The Celtics definitely need someone to do that.
Is that person possibly Jordan Walsh? And also, how much credit have you taken around just the media landscape for being, you know, getting the pick you wanted? Not the pick you wanted, the pick you thought was a good target.
I haven't shared this publicly, but I will right now. Minutes before the Jordan Walsh pick, we were all at the Celtics practice facility, the writers, because they had a press conference very late that night at like 2 or 3 in the morning. And I called that they were going to select Jordan Walsh. So salute to me.
Yeah, this is your chance.
Salute to me. No, I don't really care. I mean, I do think, obviously, from the way I've spoken about Jordan Walsh, I think it's a good pick. There, it's rare to get a dude who's 6'7", or I think he measured at 6'6", whatever, with shoes off, with a 7'2 wingspan and endless motor, loves playing defense, selfless guy, and seems like he has a great attitude to him. Those guys, and he was a 5-star prospect in high school, probably has more offensive game, or at least offensive talent, than he was able to show during his lone year in college. I think that's a good pick. It's somebody who could impact the Celtics long term. Just seeing him in person today, the Celtics had their first summer league practice, he's skinny.
How old is he? 19?
He's going to need to put on some weight. Yeah, he's a young buck. He's got some filling out to do. but he's tough and he's tall and he's long and he does a lot of things on the court. So that's always a good start. You asked if he would be the energy guy. I mean, I'm sure he'll help on a daily basis with energy, but typically somebody outside of the rotation isn't your leader in that regard. I doubt he'll be a rotation guy during his first year, but who knows? The defensive instincts are definitely there, and I think he has a chance to be a really, really good defender.
That's interesting. We'll see if Joe even cares about him if he can't make threes. Joe's all about the 3-point shot. Anyway, I haven't really seen him like develop a rookie, so because there was no real, you know, upside guys on the roster last year. So be interesting to see how much playing time he gets. Did we cover all the news? Celtics. I guess we haven't explicitly talked about the Kristaps Porzingis, but what did you think about them getting him for 2 more years at $60 million?
It just seems like good value for both sides. From the Celtics' perspective, if he stays healthy, plays like he did last season, that's just going to be a really good deal. And from Kristaps's side, he locks in $60 million, a guy who has a long injury history and understands his situation could change pretty quickly if he's not healthy and available to lock in $60 million. It just makes sense for both sides. It also, though, gives the Celtics a lot of salary moving forward. And if they do sign Jaylen Brown to a Supermax extension, which they have given off every indication that they hope to do so, then they already have $180 million committed to, I think it's like about $180 million committed to 9 guys in 2024-25, 8 or 9, whatever it is. $180 million committed. That, like, they're destined to be pushing the second apron or crashing through it if they keep this core together long term. And I think if you win a title, that's cool. Like, whatever. If you win a title, anything's cool. But if you don't, then, and it doesn't work, Porzingis gets hurt or something else happens, like, it could be a lot of chips in a pot that you don't rake in. So
pulled through on that metaphor. I think,
yeah, I didn't know where I was going with it, but finally landed the plane.
Yeah, I think it's a fine deal. You don't have to pay him the max, and the fact it's only a 2-year extension, it just kind of, there'll be 1 year of Jaylen Brown like paying his extension, and then 1 year, like the final year of the Porzingis deal, is presumably both Tatum and Brown's extension. And so that's Porzingis' last year. I think we've seen a return of like expiring contracts now are more valuable under the new CBA. It used to be all the rage back in the day. Everyone was looking for expiring contracts. And then with a giant cap spike, they didn't really matter anymore. But they're back, baby. And so I think Porzingis, we'll see how good he is, but it's not like the biggest threat unless he does get hurt. And there's a chance he could be very good as a third banana. Let me ask you this. We are more than a week out from the actual trade. You've heard probably a bunch of people think, like, give their analysis on like whether or not they thought it was a good deal. But where do you like stand today on how Kristaps is going to fit like with Jaylen and Jason? And you think it's like they're still in prime position or like to be in contention this year? We've already discussed they are, but like, how are you feeling a week out from the deal?
I think it just makes sense. It changes the way that teams have to guard you, because with Marcus Smart, I think a lot of the times, at least against the best teams, those three were just easy switches, right? You could switch, you'd probably get away with it. Celtics weren't going to really post you up. Smart wasn't a super scoring threat, although he averaged 15 points a game, had a pretty good playoff run. And now Porzingis, like, if you switch all those actions, then he could just shoot over the top of you. And he did a great job of that last season. Wasn't as productive with that in the past, but I think there's hope that he got stronger and he got more efficient and he just learned, all right, I can just shoot over the top of these guys. They can't bother me. I'm really good at this and I'm going to be a good post player from now on. And So from that standpoint, I like it. The biggest question I have is, are they tough enough? Are they energetic enough? Like Marcus Smart, he was their energy. And I'm not just talking about like he was the guy, like the tough, physical, like crazy, sometimes crazy guy. But I just mean on a daily basis, Marcus Smart was the one who just brought them life. And I don't know if they've replaced that. I don't know if Kristaps Porzingis is that guy. I don't know if Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, it's in their character to be that. And they're great. Those guys work really hard. They're good teammates. Like, there's no issue with them, but I just don't know if they're that guy. And can they be that guy? I think it's more important than ever that they step into that role. I mean, there's still time to add more leadership, but it seems like there's kind of not a void because they have Al Horford. They have a lot of guys who have.
They got Jordan Walsh. He's a big energy guy here.
Exactly. But especially if they lose Grant Williams, like those are two of the highest energy guys that they had on a daily basis in their practice facility. And you miss that. And I just don't know whether they filled that. I don't know whether the other guys without Smart will be just missing something. And I think it's possible that they will be. And I think it's possible that the human element of this trade and the locker room element of this trade is a really, really big deal. And maybe it's not. Maybe I'm mistaken and maybe it's overblown. Maybe Porzingis can do some of those things, and maybe Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown can spread their wings even more.
That's the crazy theory I just talked myself into in the past 2 minutes, is that maybe Marcus Smart was like too big of a personality, and he was like, everyone said he's the heart and soul of the team, but for the Celtics to truly flourish, it needs to be Tatum and Brown to be the ones who actually like take over, who set the tone and be the leader. And maybe they're just they had to trade away Marcus so Tatum and Brown could fully blossom as leaders, because he was too much of the heart and soul and the heartbeat. And if it doesn't come from the top, it's not going to be as effective. That's the crazy story. I just convinced myself that this is actually going to allow Tatum and Brown to be better leaders.
Maybe.
Yeah, but I can see it. It could happen.
But what happens, like, what happens when Jimmy Butler is coming at you in the playoffs and he's scoring time and time again? Like, who's the guy to step up and just say, Jimmy's not doing this anymore?
It was Jason Tatum. When Jason Tatum guarded Jimmy Butler in the Eastern Conference Finals, Jimmy Butler was not good. Jimmy Butler did not have great games in the Eastern Conference Final, yet we call him Playoff Jimmy. It's very upsetting, but we're not going back there. I don't want to revisit the playoffs. But it's not like Marcus Smart necessarily was the one who stepped up and was able to do that. As much as I love Marcus, it's not like he was a lockdown defender, especially last year compared to where he previously was.
I think in the playoffs he was really good. And he also had the ability to like just do weird stuff like guard Joel Embiid.
Yeah, that's going to be missed.
And Derek White can't do that. Like, so I don't think you can throw Derek White on Joel Embiid for a second. You couldn't even throw Derek White on Jimmy Butler. He got yanked from a playoff game. And I think that to me is like Marcus Smart was never afraid. There was not a situation where he screwed up. He certainly made mistakes. Sometimes he shot too much. Sometimes he made turnovers. But you never looked at Marcus Smart and were like, this guy is shying away. This guy is worried about this guy. And I think there's value to that, and there's real value. And that value might even be more important deep in the playoffs than it is at other times. And I mean, you look at some of the games Smart had in elimination games, some of the series that he had deep in playoffs, some of the plays he made, the game 7 block against Toronto in the bubble. Like he seemed, I don't know if he had another gear or he just never lost a gear. And I think that's important. And like Derek White was better than Marcus Smart this past season. And I think it's it could be smart to bet on Derek White instead of Marcus Smart and have him be the starting point guard and give him more of those responsibilities. But he also got yanked out of a playoff game because he could not do anything with Jimmy Butler. And I don't think that would ever happen with Marcus Smart. And so I just think I think there's a downside to this trade that is real and that this is a risk. And there's also upside too. Like Porzingis gives him a totally new dimension. He and Robert Williams together will just be Dylan Gulf teams. Nobody will be able to score at the rim when those guys are both on the court. And Al Horford too, throw him in the mix. Those are three great defending centers. And Porzingis can play power forward and play next to either one of those guys. And it's possible that like Porzingis will be better offensively. It's possible that his impact at the rim will just totally transform their defense and allow them to be more aggressive on the perimeter with the guys they still have. But it's a risk. And this is a substantial trade. It's one of those things where I think you can lay out the pluses and minuses. At the end of the day, I don't know whether the Celtics got better. I don't know whether the Celtics got worse. I don't know if they're just very similar to what they were before. And it's possible that any of those things are true, right?
Anything is possible.
This is not like an automatic win trade, I don't think. And yeah, I think Porzingis he's been hurt too. That's another factor. He could get hurt again.
The biggest risk. Well, first I have to ask you a question. Did a waiter come up to you and tell you that water wasn't potable, or did she say potable and you just made a tweet?
No, she said potable. She said
and
potable.
The fact that you did not immediately scream anything is potable is a shameful moment for you, Jay.
I should have.
I guess it's not your thing. It's more of my thing. But if we're going to start a brand here, if we're going to get other people doing it, you have to take advantage of those opportunities. But the thing to me about the Porzingis trade is that we talked about the risk of losing Marcus Smart on defense. Does Porzingis really work playing with Al Horford and Rob Williams? Like you talked about how he's going to really be like a 2-point. He's going to get you scoring from inside. And that's what adds a different dynamic to this offense. The Celtics have been a spread the ball out, like usually playing five out a lot when they can. The double big lineup has not been, it certainly was not a good offense for them last year. Can Kristaps play into that, especially if you want him on the inside? Is he going to have to play the five a lot? And like, I don't know, do him and Rob Williams really work out as like an offensive pairing?
I think so. The Wizards last year scored, I think it was 121 points per 100 possessions when Porzingis was on the court with Daniel Gafford. Gafford is another rim runner. Like he's strictly a center. And so that was very viable for them. And they didn't have Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Derek White around those guys. So yeah, I think that is a very viable look. I think that's one of the key reasons why Kristaps Porzingis was the guy that they targeted and were willing to first move Brogdon and then later move Marcus Smart for. I do think it's possible that his scoring just totally changes things for them. Because they had, when you really look at it, they had everything was in the hands of their perimeter guys. Al Horford shot threes, which is cool. Robert Williams dunked, which is cool. Other than that, those guys didn't really score at all in any way. Al Horford's 2-point offense went away. His free throw attempts went away. Robert Williams makes an occasional 12-foot jumper, but other than that, it's just layups and dunks. Porzingis gets to the free throw line. He scores inside. He can post up switches. He can just give you variety that the Celtics never had last year. And I think that could be a really big deal. So, yeah, I think, and especially to me, it's not about the points per possession in the regular season, even though I just cited that from the Washington Wizards. It's not about that. It's because we know the Celtics can have a great offense in the regular season, but we also know that against really sharp, disciplined teams in the playoffs, their offense has been super inconsistent over the last couple of seasons. And you need to find a way to win in the muck and to make sure that the teams aren't able to go zone on you and teams aren't able to just take charges on you and just do stuff to muck you up and force you to turn it over. And that's why the Porzingis thing in theory makes sense basketball wise.
I think one thing that's going to be very interesting is like, how much do they use Porzingis? How much are they like running? Are they like running post-ups for him? His usage rate last year was 27% and Marcus Smart's was like 17. And so how often do you want to take the ball out of Tatum's hands and Jaylen's hands to like run stuff for Kristaps Porzingis? What does a Kristaps Porzingis, Jason Tatum pick and roll look like? Like, is that something that can be really useful? And so like, how are those guys going to be integrated and working together? I think is the most interesting thing, because I think Kristaps is just used to having the ball in his hand more often. And so it's going to be fascinating to see how they work those three guys in together.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's been a lot of other NBA moves. We got Dame Lillard rumors. We got James Harden rumors. We got Fred Van Vliet making over $40 million a year, which is kind of wild. I'll just pass to you. Go hear anything about NBA free agency you want to react to.
I loved the Fred Van Vliet deal for Houston. Because
sure, why not? They're not, who else are they going to spend their money on?
Because he's a culture setter. He will enhance their young guys who they should be building around. He enhances them both on the court and off it. They don't have like a natural point guard in that group. They needed someone to organize them and make things easier for them and accentuate the physical gifts, whatever, that they already have. And Fred Van Vliet should go in there and be mature and just give them a layer of adulthood that they didn't have before, while Ime just yells at all the young guys to do stuff better. The Damian Lillard thing, it's about time.
Yeah.
I was sick of the game of chicken they were playing. I think everyone was sick of the game of chicken they were playing. He's going to materially change somebody's fortunes. And
seems like it's Miami. It was where he's.
If he ends up in Miami, that is a dangerous squad, because.
Yeah, well, the two targets would be, or it sounds like the early targets will all be Eastern Conference teams. So it's just like. The Sixers seemingly will get worse with losing Harden. The Bucks pretty much kept everyone running it back, except they lost Javon Carter. I think the Cavs made some interesting moves. The Knicks really haven't done anything, but the Celtics are still at the top of the East. But adding Dame to this Heat team, and I think Chris Haynes just tweeted that it would have to be a three-team deal, so I don't know how exactly they probably have to give up Tyler Hero and more just to match salaries, but that makes the Heat a lot more dangerous. And I just don't like the idea of the Heat team that just beat the Celtics adding the star, although it doesn't really feel like that fits into Heat culture if they let all their scrappy undrafted players go. Gabe Vincent gone, Max Strus gone, and so maybe that will weaken the Heat. But
do you think the Celtics should go after him if they could?
After Dame? No, like when you were talking about like the picks they might have earlier, I was thinking like maybe go after Dame, but that's like a fully win. Like they need to win in the first 2 years. I don't know. What's his contract like? Feels like it's absolutely ginormous. And at that point, you're like basically bringing in a primary star ball handler, and it just feels like doesn't really mix with Tatum that well. So I've never really been in on Dame going to the Celtics. What else? You seem to be a big fan of the Indiana Pacers offseason so far.
Huge fan of the Indiana Pacers offseason. I want to go back to the Dame conversation a little bit, because I think I don't want to just pass over the idea that, and who knows, if he doesn't want to go there, stars typically don't go somewhere. Like they're able to pick and choose at least like a select group of teams where they're willing to go to. And typically if they don't want to go somewhere, they don't want to go there. And it's out there that Boston isn't his favorite spot. However, if he would change his mind, I just think, and the Celtics could potentially make a trade that did not include Brown or Tatum. And if you could enter next season with like Derek White, Malcolm Brogdon picks and pick swaps, and they could load up a bunch of picks, bunch of pick swaps. That would certainly be enough to top Miami's offer. And you'd be able to add him to Jalen Brown, Jason Tatum, and Kristaps Porzingis, which would be just a loaded top four. I don't know. I wouldn't dismiss the idea if it's possible that he'd want to go there. But I also think it's probably Miami, because it seems like all signs are pointing to he wants to play in Miami. I don't think Portland will do him dirty after all the years that he spent there. Although if I were Portland, I would probably want another package, because Miami's offer just really isn't great.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do love the Pacers offseason. Pacers. Bruce,
I don't even know who they got. Bruce Brown and who else?
Bruce Brown is good, and then Obi Toppin. They traded for Obi Toppin.
I didn't realize you were such an Obi Toppin guy.
I just think he makes a lot of sense for them. They started Aaron Nesmith sometimes at the four and were just really small. They needed more size there. They obviously want to stay athletic, because Halliburton is just great in transition. Obi Toppin is a freak, and I just think those three guys complement each other. Toppin and Bruce Brown are both like super high energy athletic dudes. I just think with Tyrese Halliburton leading fast breaks to those guys, it makes sense. And they got like Bruce Brown, his contract is a lot, but you have to overpay.
It's a team option too on the second year. So it's like, oh, yeah, maybe Bruce Brown's not as good as we thought he was. You only take the hit for 1 year.
And you have to overpay a free agent if you're Indiana Pacers. You have to. I kind of love their offseason. It was.
I'm trying to think who else has made like significant. The Cavs added George Niang, and
that's a big deal for them too. That's because I don't think people realized last year just how low level their wings were.
Oh,
like they had.
I saw many games with Isaac Noscoro. I mean, they needed someone else in there who could just knock down a shot.
It was him. It was Lamar Stevens, and like those guys are tough. They have physicality. They can defend, but they needed somebody who could be tough and defend and also make plays and make things easier for Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland. And I think Strus and Niang both do that. They're offensively, they'll be great complements to Mitchell and Garland. Defensively, Niang isn't awful and Strus is okay. And with Mobley and Allen at center and power forward, I think they did a really good job of with minimal paths to upgrading their wings. They did a really good job of doing that.
I'd have to agree. We have run out of time, at least with my time. I'm done podcasting, not just because the Zoom only has a minute left, but we will be back as soon as whatever Grant Williams news happens. We'll be here to report it. If there's a crazy Dame Lillard trade, if there's another wild trade with all the picks that Jay King was talking about earlier, we'll be back here on Anything Is Podable. Thank you guys for listening. Please rate it, subscribe, you know, leave us a 5-star review. I feel like people don't do that enough. The word's not vain, but I go back and read all the reviews sometimes. A lot of people don't like me. A lot of people don't like you. It'd be nice to get some more 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. You know, you can even use it just to make fun of us, but just make sure it has 5 stars. That's all I got, Jay. Anything left from you?
Nothing left.
Oh, I mean, we haven't even talked about the Summer League roster yet.
That's good. Good for us.
That's good because we got a lot of stuff. Once this free agency goes away, we'll have to figure out something else to talk about. But anything is potable, folks. Thank you guys for listening. We'll be back whenever news happens.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.